This is Baby Talk with Penny Johnston.
Have you started your baby on solids yet? It is a massive milestone, especially one for rookie first-time parents. Wonder if you've ever noticed that second children always start eating solids a whole lot later than their older siblings? Starting on solids is a wild ride for a lot of parents. It's the beginning of an important developmental phase. Your baby is becoming a toddler, growing teeth, independence, and a disturbing ability to say no. Every one of those stages is enough to challenge any new parent. Throw in mushy, messy food, tantrums, and you can see how easily introducing solids can run into huge problems. Well, Learn to Eat, Love to Eat are a series of workshops designed by two speech pathologists with a specialisation in pediatric feeding. And you can kind of imagine how these workshops came about when the specialists learned the very hard way that feeding toddlers can be an uphill battle. Nicole Wu and Rachel Smith developed their practical workshops for parents after helping heaps of friends through the trauma of introducing solids. Now, they are joining us on Baby Talk to talk about how to eliminate some of those problems associated with mealtimes with a toddler. But I guess really the first thing I wanted to ask you guys, is it silly of us just to imagine that babies are born knowing how to eat? I mean, after all, they do seem to manage the drinking bit okay.
Well, for the first few months, it is definitely reflexes and very intuitive in terms of sucking and feeding. And then when it comes to starting solids, it's a whole bunch of new skills that need to be learnt. So things like taking food from a spoon or learning to chew and drink from a cup, they're all skills that babies need to actually learn.
In the beginning, it can be quite messy and spill a lot, and they're still learning how to do it, but over time you'll see that they'll get the skills that they need.
So there's not the same sort of instinct to the taking of solid food. I mean, obviously there is a bit of reflex going on there, but in just a straight scientific way, what are they actually learning how to do?
Look, when they're developmentally ready, I think they're quite naturally curious to start mouthing more foods and exploring things with their mouth. We definitely see that kind of development happen around 4 to 6 months of age usually. So it becomes an obvious thing when you know, put food and things in front of babies and they start to pay attention to you eating. It quite naturally can develop that they start to want to put things in their mouth and pay more attention to food and eating.
Some children find this a bit more difficult than others.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think too there's a lot of conflicting information out there about, you know, when you should start and what you should do and what you should give your baby and all that kind of stuff. So it can be really confusing for parents when they're looking at starting solids with their baby. And one of our big messages is to really observe your baby and look for the signs of readiness. That is that they're, you know, looking to the food and starting to pay attention to food and you eating and maybe starting to sit up a bit more independently and reaching for food and trying to put things in their mouth and things like that. So different babies develop at different rates and quite a big range in what's normal in terms of that development. But some children too are more sensitive than others and are a bit more hesitant. But babies tend to, you know, when we do kind of give them the right learning environment in terms of food and mealtimes, they do have a bit of a natural desire to explore food most of the time.
I have to say, personally, I'm finding this really hard to relate to because I just had a baby that was rampant around food and would actually sort of bang the table when he wanted more food.
So it's a good problem to have.
I know. But so what are some of the things that would cause babies to have sort of less excitement around the whole idea of eating solids?
So when babies are born, there can be different factors that can impact feeding. So children that we see that might have more difficulty around solids would be children who have had a history of reflux, vomiting, maybe babies who've been sick or born early, so they've had tube feeding and a lot of intervention around the face and mouth area. They can be a lot more wary of food. Some children are more sensitive to the different aspects of eating. So eating takes every one of your senses. It's got taste, touch, smell, the feel of it, how they're feeling in their space and sitting up. Every sense is involved. So if a baby is particularly sensitive in a particular area, it can be really difficult for them. If they've got strong taste reactions or touch reactions, we see a lot of difficulties there.
I do remember somebody saying to me once, if you put a mouthful of spinach and chew it 300 times because your baby doesn't have teeth and realise just how long something has to sit in your mouth to sort of get gummed around before you can swallow it, you'll have a lot more empathy with your baby trying new things.
Yeah, my example is I use a lot of pub examples. And so if you're at the pub and you have a steak and it's really tough and you're chewing on it and you don't enjoy it and you don't want to swallow it and you don't want to finish your meal because it's not enjoyable, even cutting it is difficult. So like that's a prime example for children. If they're finding it too difficult to eat, more likely to refuse it.
Tell me a little bit about you guys, your backgrounds, and why you became interested in helping families learn more about teaching children to eat.
So Rach and I became parents at roughly the same time, and we were on leave from our jobs, and we work with children who have quite complex feeding issues, and it's been a bit of a passion area of ours. I think we both love to eat, and it's really lovely to be able to support children to develop those skills. And when we were on maternity leave with our little babies, we started talking with a lot of other new mums and realising that, you know, what we knew about how we could help our babies learn to eat wasn't really common knowledge out there, and that it was really helping with our journey with our little babies. But we really were answering a lot of questions and supporting a lot of our friends to make that transition easier for them. And so we got together and thought that we could put together some things to help more families transition their kids to solids.
And for some reason, there is a lot of frustration about it with new parents because it really is it's a really messy stage, and it's often quite a difficult stage for parents as well, because they're sometimes returning to work, and it's really a big exponential ramp up of difficulty that can become overwhelming, I think.
Absolutely. I know personally I felt like I just kind of got my head around breastfeeding and, you know, taking a baby out, and then it was time to start thinking about solids and the extra work involved in that, and the food prep and the cleanup, and, you know, it's a lot of hours in the day initially. And I think if you don't fully understand your role, I suppose, in teaching your child to eat and what that looks like, you can have some quite unrealistic expectations and put a lot of pressure on yourself and your baby. And I think what we felt is that if we can really help families see the value in some of those tasks and those chores and help them learn to manage that and understand that a bit more, then that transition is going to go much more smoothly and lead to, you know, healthier and happier eaters. Because we really felt that if things got off to a bad start and, you know, parents didn't necessarily understand the importance of that feeding relationship and those skills that need to be developed and how we develop them, then fussy eating is just so prevalent, and we really felt like that, you know, could be a big factor in preventing a lot of fussy eating in the future.
Did your children all just start eating brilliantly because you knew what you were doing?
I wish. No, I've got a little boy who's quite skeptical about anything new. So he definitely has needed a lot of support to learn to try new things. And initially he was a baby who, you know, put anything in his mouth, and that's very, very typical. When you start solids with babies, they're very interested, they're naturally interested in new foods, a lot of them anyway. But then when they become toddlers, they can become much more skeptical. It's really developmentally appropriate for them to start rejecting things that they maybe once liked or turning their nose up at anything new. And I've got a sensitive little 2.5-year-old who absolutely is skeptical about some of those new things. So I've really had to do a lot of practicing what I preach in my house, and it's quite lovely to experience that and to see that what I do have control over in terms of mealtimes and what I don't. And just because I teach this stuff and I do this for work doesn't mean that it looks perfect at my house. But I love mealtimes with my little boy, and I feel like what I'm doing is helping him become the best eater he can be, and that feels great.
Rachel, was it smooth sailing for you?
I think compared to my friends, I think the beginning I was like way more excited starting solids than a lot of my friends, and a lot of friends were feeling quite nervous, and whereas I was like really ready to practice what I preach. And so we had a good start. And again, like Nicole says, we're not immune to toddlers. So I've got a two-year-old and he loves to throw food and he is happy to say what he would like to eat, which is he's a big fan of toast. But I feel confident with the strategies we're using. So every mealtime, I know that I am responsible for when he eats, what he eats, and where he eats. And he's responsible for how much he eats and whether he eats. And some of those meals he'll have a mouthful, maybe two, and other meals he'll finish the whole lot. So it's been really nice having the confidence that we're doing the right thing.
When you think about feeding your children, it's not a once-a-day activity. This happens a lot.
No, that's the thing about eating. It's relentless. It happens at least five times a day. So if there's a behaviour happening in a mealtime, you're witnessing it at least five times a day. And so it can be really challenging.
It's hard not to take it personally, you know, when they are refusing something that you spent a long time preparing. It can be really challenging to keep cool and calm and, you know, positive when things aren't really looking the way you want them to look.
And it's darn easy to open some revolting packet that you know that they're going to eat, but when you've spent a couple of hours chopping, stirring, cooking, baking, preparing, and you get the, I don't like this.
Absolutely. We get it. And it can be really challenging and exhausting for parents. And we don't want parents to feel like they're wasting a lot of food and going to all this effort and it's wasted. And I suppose that's where we really talk about redefining what success looks like for a mealtime and talking about the language we use. You know, when we do get told, I don't like it and yuck, what do we say in response to that? And how do we encourage our kids to be curious about that food that they're not yet ready to eat? And that's okay.
Do you have a stock answer to yuck?
You're still learning about that food.
Don't jump to hasty judgments, child.
We talk a lot about keeping language positive at a mealtime. I have a thrower. Like, that's his go-to. So if there's something that is making him feel uncomfortable about a meal, whether it's maybe I'm not giving him the right attention, I might be distracted, I might get a phone call or something, the food ends up on the floor. Rather than saying, don't throw your food, it's about saying, how about we keep the food on the table? You know, keeping that language as positive as possible. Like, oh, remember, we keep the food on the table. How about you put it in this little bowl rather than throwing it away?
So. And Rach identified something really important there too is, you know, all the behaviours that we see at mealtime, like any other behaviour, you know, there's a reason behind it. And understanding the reason behind the behaviours can really be the first point of figuring out how do we respond to that behaviour to help prevent that behaviour from happening.
The parents that do say, and look, you know, we've met really wonderful parents who have got, oh, my child will eat nothing but Vegemite and Weet-Bix, and you must come across parents in situations like that.
You know, absolutely.
It's tough.
It really is. It really is. And, you know, you don't get there overnight. It's really hard. Often with fussy eating, it's often the harder the parents try to resolve it, the worse it can become. And that's heartbreaking for them. They desperately want their kids to eat a nice, healthy range of foods. And, you know, no matter what they try, they can't get their kids to eat those foods. And we really love supporting those families to move forward in a direction. And sometimes we're really chatting about redefining what success looks like. So, you know, it might not be about whether a mealtime is successful because of what your child ate, but what did they tolerate on their plate today? And, you know, was the mealtime positive? And what words were used and all that kind of stuff. So really supporting parents to really break it down because, you know, you can't control what your child puts in their mouth and necessarily how much they eat and what they choose. But we can, as Rach said, we can control some of those things. And it's, parents have said to me, it's quite liberating to be able to let go of some of those responsibilities that you just actually can't control anyway. So it's been really nice to work with families to take a step back and think about what things they can change to help move mealtimes in the right direction.
For many parents, it's the first big hurdle of child deciding for themselves, the first time where you don't entirely control what your child's going to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's toddlers. They're all so different, aren't they? And I think it's quite humbling. I think it's been really humbling for me, I think, as a speech pathologist who spent years helping parents, you know, with young children, to have my own toddler and have my own challenges. I think it's something that, I don't know, it's just understanding what you can and can't do in those situations and being okay with that and being able to sit with that and feel confident that what you're doing is helping your child for the long term.
There's certainly lots of advice around some of the practicalities of feeding, and there's recipes and there's ideas of what foods to use, and there's talk about using different textures and things like that. But as far as sort of getting around the psychology of it, sometimes as an exhausted parent you can be guilty of projecting stuff onto your child that they're trying to win a power game. I think perhaps understanding what you're aiming towards might give a lot of parents some release if you realise that you've got your responsibility to do X, Y, and Z because you want to achieve this outcome. Do you see some of your parents really relaxing around that?
There's been a lot of research out of North America, a woman called Ellen Satter. She talks about the division of responsibility in feeding. And so her research has found that, you know, if the you can't control how much or whether your child eats. They're responsible for that. But what you can be responsible is for what they eat. So nutritious food, like offering nutritious food, but also at least one food at the dinner table or lunch table that you know your child will eat. And you're responsible for when your child eats. So ensuring that there is a routine throughout the day and at least 2 to 2.5 hours between snacks and meals and where they eat. So in comfortable seating where they're not falling off the chair or wriggling around too much, that their feet are really supported and they're at the dinner table and it's a meal that you can have together socially. And then your child is responsible for how much you eat and whether you eat. And it's a bit of a shift because my childhood and growing up, you finished your plate, whereas this is a shift from that. And that can be difficult as a parent because you tend to parent how you're parented. But once we can get our head around it. And sometimes it doesn't feel comfortable because your child's not eating as much as you hope they'd eat. And there's worries about, oh, will they sleep at night and that sort of thing. But being able to practice this is amazing. And it does, it just lifts that weight off your shoulders and takes the pressure away from meals and reduces the stress of meals, and stress decreases appetite. So you don't want to have stress at meal times. The best way we go around explaining this is throwing a dinner party for your friends. And how do you make a dinner party enjoyable for your friends? And it's not about saying, oh, you've got to eat your dinner and then you can have dessert. It's about putting the food out there, and if they eat it, they eat it. And if they don't, they don't. And there's no talking about the food and how much food goes in. And it's about enjoyable conversation and having a laugh with your friends. So it's about making that shift to dinner time or lunchtime or breakfast with your children.
I just think another thing too is parents, you know, we're so used to cheering our kids on and praising, you know, great behaviour, and that can actually go against successful mealtimes. You know, we want our children to eat foods because they want to eat the food and they have a drive to eat that food and they're curious about that food, not because we want them to eat the food. And so that can be a real shift. We do talk a lot about getting rid of that, not only bribing to eat your vegetables, but also cheerleading and praising actual eating behaviour, because we just want the kids to do that because it feels good and that's what they want to do.
And a lot of this comes from children are born with an innate ability to know when they're hungry and know when they're full. So if we want them to eat past their hunger signs and finish their plate, then they're not learning that self-regulation. And there's research now saying that it's leading to obesity and eating disorders.
This crazy situation where parents have snacks around all the time. I always sort of thought I was a bad mum because I never had any snacks in the nappy bag. But as soon as a kid sat down in the doctor's office, you know, a little bag of snacks had come out, or if you got strapped into your car seat. I sort of felt I was bad because I didn't really do that. But that's sort of another interesting change in the way we feed children.
Absolutely, yeah. Look, we know, you know, snacks are great and and we understand why parents use them, and absolutely guilty of doing it occasionally. But we really promote the regular intervals between mealtimes and snack times. So children definitely need snacks, but we really encourage parents to treat them like mini meals, that we, you know, there's some structure to them and that there is a good period of time between each mealtime and snack time. We know children who graze frequently throughout the day, they're just not building up that hunger sensation, and therefore that can really lead to more fussy eating behaviour because they're getting to mealtimes and they're not fully hungry, and so they're less likely to explore that more challenging or less familiar food. They're more likely to go for their safe food. And snack foods are all, you know, a lot of them are very dry and easy to eat, and they're not challenging and not necessarily as nutritious a lot of the time. So we absolutely promote that regular interval between meal and snack times to really help children learn that sensation of hunger and learn how to satisfy that hunger. We absolutely understand when there's a need to pull a snack out and do that. But I mean, in terms of helping kids to learn to eat a big variety of foods, and it goes back to that division of responsibility. We as parents are responsible for the when and the where. And so, you know, we work really hard with parents to try and figure out a way to make that work in terms of regular snack and meal times.
Yeah, that would make dinner easier.
I think so, yeah. You know, they come to the table hungry, and it's okay for them to feel that hunger before a meal. And, you know, we know too often when a child says they're hungry, it might not be hunger, it might just be boredom too, you know. So we absolutely feel confident that, you know, if we're offering those regular meal and snack times, that we're doing our part, and so we can, you know, we can relax and know that come mealtime your child's responsible for eating.
One of the things I've noticed on your website is that you are promoting something called Messy Mondays. Tell us a bit about that.
Messy Monday came about because we were seeing more and more families coming in who were really reluctant to get mess happening around the house. But messy meals are just so important for children to learn to eat and to love to eat. First of all, there's all the different senses that are required to eat. So when children get messy, they get to experience a lot of those senses before the food even comes to their mouth. And so they can touch it, they can smell it, they can lick it, it can go everywhere and they can enjoy it. Also, part of mess for children is learning, and children learn through play. So playing with food is really important for children. They learn everything by playing, and food's no, and eating is no different. So it's one of our favourite things to do on a Monday is to post a picture of a messy baby or a toddler enjoying their food.
Can you tell us some more about the Love to Eat workshops that you guys run?
Our workshops are running in Melbourne and Geelong. We offer Starting Solids workshop for families that are about to start solids or have just started solids with their babies. We offer private group workshops and public workshops. So we love to come to mothers' groups and parent groups and talk about starting solids and answer all the questions and chat about it. At that time where parents are really starting to think about it and start to, you know, ask a lot of questions and wonder a lot of things. We also offer a toddler mealtime behaviour workshop because, as we said before, that toddlers are very different from babies and they present a whole new bunch of challenges around mealtimes. You know, we start to see that independence and that wariness and that behaviour creep in. And we feel like, you know, if we can really help parents understand what their roles are around mealtimes and how to overcome some of those behaviours, we can really help set them off to be really great eaters in the future. In our workshops, we do talk about, you know, there's not necessarily a quick fix. We spend a lot of time kind of problem solving with parents and helping them learn some tools to be able to problem solve behaviour, well, problems at mealtimes. And so we've coined something called the Circle of Mealtime Success, and it's a tool that we use in our workshops to help parents overcome mealtime challenges. So in that Circle of Mealtime Success, we look at mealtime responsibilities and roles, routines, fun, and the importance of family mealtimes. And so the combination of those four things to help kids. We offer these two workshops, both public and privately. We really hope we can just relieve a lot of stress for parents around starting solids and really help them enjoy the journey, because mealtimes are awesome. They're a social time. They should be enjoyable. Even with toddlers, they can absolutely be enjoyable. Even when your toddler's not eating everything that you'd like them to eat, mealtimes should still be really enjoyable for all families.
I'm interested to know, what's the role of the other adult in this dinner time equation.
Mm.
You can't have another parent that sits down and goes, oh, I don't like spinach, because of course the 3-year-old's going to probably arc up.
Absolutely.
It's got to be a team approach
Rachel mentioned before, you know, how children learn. Not only do they learn by playing and exploring, but they learn by watching others. And so often we see children who are fed separately and given their meals separately to the parents or the family. And we really encourage families to sit down together and eat as much as possible, because that's how children learn. They learn by watching and having that role model. And so it's absolutely okay that dad doesn't necessarily eat spinach or anything like that, but can dad still have it on his plate and show that he's interested in looking at it and touching it and smelling it and things like that? Because it's really, we want to encourage children to be curious about food, because that's how they're going to learn about that food, and they're going to be curious if they see us being curious about the food.
When I was a child, my sticking point was pumpkin.
Hated it.
And yet my little bloke loves pumpkin. Every time I dish him up 3 pieces of pumpkin and 1 piece of potato, it's like, oh man, I can't believe this is my child.
Yeah, I've got a similar situation where I don't eat seafood and I'm not a fish eater, but I've made a really conscious effort to still, like, if we go out for dinner, I'll always get him the fish, because I know, like, I don't even know how to cook fish because I've never made it for myself, because it's not something I'm interested in. And if I'm out, then my partner will cook fish for him, and he absolutely loves it, which is great for me because it's not too much to clean up. Because I don't even like, when you're thinking about like exploring food and learning about food, we talk about being able to tolerate it in your space and being able to tolerate the touch of it, even to your fingertips, before you even think about getting touch to your hands or your mouth. And for me, at fish, I think I'm at the fingertip stage.
Oh,
it's a long journey for Rach.
Are you fessing up to being a fussy eater yourself?
Oh, I was a shocker as a child, and my parents think it is hilarious. I am now in this field, but they're actually learning a lot. They look after my boy a lot. There's a few things that we've talked about along the way that are different from when I grew up. So it's been a really interesting journey in that respect.
Sometimes it is really hard for families to come together to have a meal. Do you have some solutions for that sort of geographical problem?
Absolutely. You know, I'm in a situation where my partner works evenings, and so family meal times for dinner at our house look like myself and my 2.5-year-old sitting at the table, because that's who's home at that time. So we really encourage families to make it work for them. So whoever's home at the time for meal times, that's a family dinner. And it doesn't necessarily have to be dinner. A family meal can be breakfast. It can be snack times and lunch times. So it's just making an effort to think about when everyone's home is, you know, can we sit down and share a meal together as much as possible? There's been a lot of research around the long-term benefits of family meal times. And it talks about not just in terms of children learning to eat, but long-term mental, physical health outcomes. And so really you get a lot of bang for your buck when you sit down and have a meal and you get into that habit eating with your children as much as you can throughout the week.
Nicole Wu and Rachel Smith from Learn to Eat, Love to Eat. And you can tell they are passionate about trying to reduce those feeding battles many new parents struggle with. And as far as I'm concerned, that's completely reasonable. I hope you enjoyed listening to more about how babies and toddlers learn to eat and the really important role that we have as parents in helping to guide them on the right path. If you'd like to listen to this interview again, it's available on iTunes and on the ABC Radio app.
Baby talk!
Baby talk!
Tell your friends if they have a baby, they need to listen to Baby Talk.
And, of course, you can subscribe so you can keep up to date with our podcasts as they're published. I'm Penny Johnston. I'll see you next time on Baby Talk.
Baby Talk is available as a weekly podcast. Find it on the ABC website, wherever you get your podcasts, and on the ABC Listen app.